Fans asking coaches questions, getting kicked out of the coaches' show. One fan getting kicked out of a Tennessee basketball game, apparently as a result of a fire. The athletic director up there, John Curry, chant. Things are getting crazy, man. Is it just me? Or is this...
What a cap to a season, huh? Told you guys, that Tuesday, Wednesday night maction doesn't just stop during the middle of the season there. It keeps on rolling afterwards. That was only a Wednesday night.
Wow. What an interesting night.
I mean, this is what happens when you take away people's maction on Wednesday night. No. They don't know what to do.
No.
They yell at the coach. They try to fire the AD.
There was no yelling at the coach. There was just a simple chant at a basketball game, which happens at every basketball game.
There's no simple
ever.
Chance at a basketball game. It's coordinated. It's thought out. It's well planned. It's what happens when an angry mob together comes together to prove their point. And last night, part of the blame for no action was on John Curry. Mm-hmm. Part of it was on Jimbo Fisher.
He's media hype man Bill Gunter. I'm Tim Hill. Welcome in. It's the early game. Jen Jensen alongside. Give us a shout at 803-404-6100. Love Chevrolet phone lines. If you would like to weigh in this morning. I asked this to Steve Spurrier on his way out. Right, he did those kind of weird interviews with like local people to kind of get back in decent public standing after he decided to retire midway through the season. So I got to talk to him for like 20 minutes. One of the questions I asked him, because I find him, no matter what you think about Steve Spurrier, good, bad, indifferent, he's a college football expert. So I asked him, where's college football going? With the salaries that coaches are making, the astronomical salaries, all the money being dumped into it, when do you see in the near future or the future at all a breaking point? I think we might be getting to the breaking point, man. When you're talking about nobody wants to coach at Tennessee who's qualified, no matter what money they're offering, and then the Florida State head coach being rumored strongly to be headed to Texas A&M to make, first of all, he makes astronomical money.
Right.
To make even more astronomical money. And a fan asking him where the loyalty is and literally gets pushed out of the room because of it. It's weird.
So
it's
where weird. We're looking at it from the fans' perspective, from the coaches'
perspective.
This
show's for the fans.
For the coaches, you talking about Jimbo Fisher or our show?
Our show is for fans.
It's for the fans. Yeah, we do have good fans.
No, not our fans.
No, they're good fans.
Fans in general. You're not just for your family.
No. All right, here's the question with Jimbo Fisher. Where do you move on from it? Because Jimbo Fisher this year was tumultuous. Number one, he had a rough year. They're 5-6. They got a game this weekend to try and become bowl eligible.
Louisiana Monroe, don't sleep on them.
He had the run in with the fan midway through the season.
But that's not even the right way to put it. It wasn't a run in with a fan. Like, he went out of his way to call out a fan.
All a fan did was come down and yell, new coaches. And right, Jimbo's obliging now by trying to take off and give him new coaches.
Right.
And now people are angry and asking, where's the loyalty?
And by the way, this is all just rumored that Jimbo's on his way out. There was a big-time recruit last night here in the state of South Carolina, had committed to Florida State.
Well,
right?
Now in Louisiana, originally from South Carolina.
Right. And his Israel, name is difficult to pronounce.
And people told me all last night, so I'd be able to say it on the show. And then I slept, and now I can't say it.
I think maybe Mukuamu.
Something like that.
But he officially decommitted last night, which none of this is official, by the way. But right. He just went on Twitter and said he's decommitting from Florida State. So South Carolina commit to carry on Joyner went right on Twitter and said, I don't have to say much, just come play with me, basically.
Yeah.
So, but this is where Florida State is right now. The reports are that it is going to happen. Florida State's already looking into trying to hire Willie Taggart away from Oregon. Oregon's already upping their contract to Willie Taggart, a guy who won. How many games? Did he win 6 games this year in his 1 year at Oregon? So weird to me. And I think the common fan out there, because that's how I see myself looking at college football. I'm just a guy who likes to watch college football. I didn't play college football, never coached college football, but I grew up watching college football. I love watching college football. But I feel more and more distant, I think, from guys who make 7-8 figures coaching the game. And then I understand to some degree where Tennessee fans are at when they see their athletic director basically getting turned down by what now. I mean, they've moved. Yesterday, it seemed like Tennessee and the reports around the coaching search were pretty confident that Jeff Brohm was going to come from Purdue to Tennessee, because I understand Purdue had a decent run, the Drew Brees era, and before then, it's a decent college football program, maybe 45 or 50th, but Tennessee has the ninth most wins in college football history, and they rightly feel, Tennessee fans rightly feel like they deserve to be back in a top 10 every single time, every single year conversation. But what we're seeing right now is that coaches disagree.
Well, I don't think it's...
Now they're moving on to Dave Doran, man.
Here's the thing, because let's take two or three coaching searches that just took place with a plan and that I guess you would call well executed. Number one, let's start with Florida's. A little bit more high profile than Mississippi State, but Florida's, they swung for the fences. Chip Kelly didn't get him. Scott Frost, hard to say, because it stayed kind of under wraps. Maybe they made a pitch to Scott Frost. Scott Frost said, no thanks, I'm happy here. Maybe he said, I'm going to Nebraska. We don't know, because it stayed kind of under wraps.
Which is part of this deal, right?
Exactly. And then they land Dan Mullen, their third option. They had basically a safe option, and it worked out. Ray Tanner kind of did the same thing. I think Ray Tanner had, all right, Tom Herman. And maybe, we don't know, because Ray Tanner kept it fairly quiet, if he vetted Justin Fuente. Where South Carolina fans got mad was at the very end, where all of a sudden it looked like there was a line of coaches up in Charlotte just rolling through Ray Tanner's hotel room. Rich Rodriguez, Willie Taggart, Lincoln Riley. Remember all that? And that's when fans got mad and said, whoa, whoa, whoa. Even at South Carolina, why are we interviewing? Why is it so public? Why are we getting turned down to everybody? Remember the outrage when Rich Rodriguez, I think, made it up on his own that he had turned down the job? And
Greg Byrne, his athletic director, came out and said, good news, he's coming back to Arizona.
I think it's like being in middle school and you're getting turned down by girl after girl after girl. Nobody wants to go through that. I think if Tennessee had kept this thing quieter and you still kind of were, we were all kind of in the dark and we didn't know what was going on, I don't think there would be the outrage. But when it's like publicly, you're showing up at the doorstep of the coach going, hey, we got a job here. You want to come join us? Run our football team? And they're going, somebody down the street. Why don't you go check down the street and come, you know, it's somebody. I mean, they right now publicly look like they've been turned down by Mike Gundy, by Jeff Brohm. David Cutcliffe has been out there having turned them down. There's probably others that I'm forgetting about have publicly.
Let's start with John Gruden, right?
Well, John Gruden, we don't know if that was ever a thing or not. That is the one, maybe give them credit that John Gruden never officially came out and said, yep, appreciate it. I mean, John Gruden, for all we know, that lasted one phone call. John, you interested? Nope. All right, thanks. And they moved on basically by November. We don't know how quickly or how long that one took out. But now you're kind of going through some guys who are either at the very beginning of their career, who you think that would want that job over Purdue. Obviously, Dave Doran looking at NC State going, you're a good job. Tennessee much better. Let me go there. The problem is Tennessee fans go, wait. Your qualifications don't fit what we want. And then there was the whole thing with Greg Schiano, and, man, that thing is a absolute disaster up there.
I mean, part of the job of an athletic director is to make sure they control the information that gets out. So that's why I have no sympathy for how this thing is playing out publicly, because clearly there are issues controlling the message and controlling this coaching search and the names that get out there.
Well, and to go back to this, because a lot of fans I had on the Tennessee message boards last night.
Why would you do that?
Because it gives you a feel of what may call our show. But because here's the point with that. A lot of Tennessee fans, to go back to the point I was just making, when you won't just stop turning us down. Stop saying you don't want us. A bunch of them are saying, take T. Martin. We know he's going to say yes. We know T. Martin will say yes. Take him now and end this. Now,
did you see what Lane Kiffin did last night?
He is having a ball with this. Lane Kiffin is having way too much fun in college football right now.
Did you
now.
See it, Jen? It might be the funniest picture I've ever seen.
I hadn't seen it. Which one is this?
You haven't seen it?
I don't. It's not the one. He's put out three or four. Like, he put out the one with The Rock that said, bring Lane back, and he tweeted out, I sent Knox. His son, his name is Knox. He said, I flew Knox up to paint that on The Rock, and now his third grade teacher wonders where he's at.
This got 32,000. It has 32,000 retweets right now, the picture that Lane Kiffin
That's
popped up
amazing.
Last night. It says, the caption at the top says, breaking news, Kim Jong-un has turned down the Tennessee job. Okay, with an amazing Photoshop of Kim Jong-un. I guess it's over Butch Jones in a Tennessee pullover, arms crossed. And I just wonder, like, did he go to a staffer who's really good at Photoshop and say, hey, man, here's what I need?
Yeah.
Or did he do it himself? Is he a Photoshop wizard himself? For whatever the case is, that was amazing.
What an exciting time.
Lane Kiffin just continues to be super troll to Tennessee at this point, just pouring the salt in the wounds.
Have you taken the time to scroll through Lane Kiffin's Twitter? I came to the one where there is a...
If I had gone on the Tennessee message boards last night, I would have had enough time to do that.
There is a GIF, a picture, and it has Nick Saban in 2016, and it's a quote he had at a press conference. You should have to win your conference to be in the CFB playoff. And then it's got a picture, and then it's got a picture of him. And this is the Southern Cal message board, actually. I put it out. And then there's a picture of him in 2017, last Saturday, where he says, I think this team deserves the opportunity to get into the playoff by what they've been able to accomplish. And Lane Kiffin retweeted it, and at the top says, can you rat poison yourself?
Like rat poison.
Kiffin, his Twitter account.
Like, we see this all the time on Twitter, right? But we usually see it from, like, snarky 22-year-olds, maybe those of us who have never really matured past the level of high school that are 39, or which I guess is about where Kiffin is. But not someone that's in the coaching fraternity, man. This is a guy. He is the guy who is not afraid to cross the line. Chris hits us up on the Shepherd's Glass inbox, says, Kiffin stole the Kim Jong-un pick instead of retweeting it. I know I saw it 2 or 3 hours before Lane made it really blow up, which would be perfect. I mean, it fits perfectly in who Mr. Kiffin is.
Go out.
But it is amazing what he's doing and what he's, I mean, just the bridges he's just burning. Just blowing up. Well, he doesn't care because he doesn't have to, because he knows he's such a good coach. Not that he knows he is. He's proven he's such a good X's and O's guy on the field.
And I think he's truly happy where he's at. Like, he's made money. I mean, we've talked about this before. Like, you know, you got somebody like Mike Gundy who's getting paid close to $5 million at Oklahoma State. What's $2 million more? Like, who are you helping? Your great grandkids down the line, because he's got some pictures from last night. I don't know what this is. I thought he only had one kid. Maybe he's got more. But pictures of, like, children, him and his children fishing, like, obviously out kind of in the sea, because one of them's in a boat and they're catching a really big tarpon. He's got some kind of mahi pit fish here on here. Like, I think he truly, truly enjoys his lifestyle right now, being down there in Florida, fishing like that.
Does a Twitter troll truly enjoy their life?
There's no doubt he's enjoying that. I mean, he's just taking aim. Right now, it's just Nick Saban and Tennessee. And I'm just going to take aim, and I'm just scrolling through. And some of this goes back to what I said as I scroll through Lane Kiffin's Twitter account, what I said either Tuesday or yesterday, just in regards to fans and the access you have now to pretty much anything, whether it be the president of the United States, whether it be the athletic director, whether it be your coach. You can fire off a 280-character tweet. There's a good chance they're going to read it, and Lane Kiffin's responding to fans. Fans are telling him how great. You might send him a tweet today. You say, hey, you're awesome. Come be the offensive coordinator for South Carolina and coach against Tennessee. And there's a chance he's going to respond. And
happened to me last night, by the way. I was watching Clemson, Ohio State basketball.
Uh-huh.
Dan Dockich was doing the color, his former coach. And they did a segment called Not So Mean Tweets off of Jimmy Kimmel. And I just tweeted out, I was like, this is the best thing I've seen about college basketball TV in November. He retweets it like 2 minutes later.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
I mean, and there you go. That's the kind of access that fans, the regular fan that's getting in their car this morning, you're trying to get your kids to school, you can fire off a tweet and there's a chance that particular person's going to respond to you. Whereas 10 years ago, that wasn't possible. You were still fairly separated from your head coach, your athletic director. You know, again, I'll use, because I think the president we have in office now is the best example of that.
Sure.
Like somebody who will respond to you, the average person, via Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
And coaches and athletic directors are the same way. And
But here's the difference, though. I think that's where the disconnect is growing these days, because it was a relatively legit question from a Florida State fan yesterday to Jimbo Fisher. just bringing up the fact that he's talked about loyalty before. Now he's and he gets pushed out of the room, man.
And pushed and pushed. I mean, right? It wasn't just like you can leave now. I mean, he just kept getting shoved. I thought that's pretty harsh.
Well, but if you haven't seen the video, you should definitely check it out. Yeah. And a lot of people have come back, especially media people, and like, if that guy had done that to me, there would have been a problem. There would have been a serious problem because that is uncalled for. Now, I would like to know more of the room and the environment. Clearly, it was an all Florida State thing. It was part of Jimbo Fisher call-in show that he does every week before a game because they're playing a game again this week because of a hurricane rescheduled game, Louisiana Monroe.
And so they're playing a game because they want to become bowl eligible.
Right.
If they were 6-5 this game, or if they'd have been 7-4, mm-hmm. whatever, right. this game would not be taking place.
Well, they can still make money off of it, right? You don't think so? Wouldn't that be the main reason you do it in college athletics?
There's no way they're making money on that this week. Okay. They've got to pay Louisiana Monroe. You got to pay the state. I mean, in all seriousness, you got to pay Louisiana Monroe to come. You got to pay the stadium workers, security, whomever. You got to pay the electricity to turn the lights on, whatever.
You just don't think there'll be enough fans to show up to make money.
I guess you've got your season ticket money. I guess that is you just honor the season tickets from that
game. You don't have to refund it.
You've already got the money, but there's no way they'll make money off of that game this weekend.
I hear you. But the problem is that we can have a lot more communication these days, except for coaches in certain positions who just won't answer questions. I mean, Scott Frost basically shut down the entire Nebraska thing, and it looks like that's going to happen, but he hasn't talked about it publicly. Now, he hasn't pushed anybody out of the room for asking the question. He just simply says it's not about that now. It's about our players and the whole thing moving forward, the standard old line. But I think this is part of the disconnect between fans and big-time coaches who just aren't willing to be candid at this point. I understand it to a large degree, but with a guy like Jimbo Fisher, it certainly comes off as slimy in the way that Florida State thing went down yesterday. Now, I'm sure they probably said in the room, all right, he's just going to talk about the game and his players, and that's what it's about this week. And so no more questions outside of that. And the guy asked a question outside of that, and so he was promptly kicked out. To do so, though, physically is maybe a little harsh. Maybe it came off stronger than it actually was in the room on video
right.
from the angles we had on the video. You can check it out. I've retweeted that. Tomahawk Nation, I think, is where you can watch it. We'll replay you the audio about that and get into our college football playoff discussion this morning as well. Of course, the Tennessee coaching search. I don't know if you just heard it, but Amy Lawrence, the show before ours, the national show, had a fan on from Knoxville, and he just sounded... I think she had to talk him off the ledge.
Well, I mean, Amy Lawrence does a show from what, 3 to 6 a.m.
Mm-hmm. But this was just here at 5:45
Well, still,
Knoxville.
If you're already up at that point, you're already.
But it sounded like he had stayed up through the night and was just staring at the Kim Jong Un picture that Lane Kiffin threw out. Gotten a little bit of a break from a fan perspective here recently after the Carolina-Clemson game. A few days off. I know USC women's basketball played the next day, but that was at a tournament. They're back in action at home tonight. Mm-hmm. The Gamecock men's basketball team also back in action tonight at Madison Square Garden. It'll be a late one. It's at Temple. 9 o'clock game. Our coverage will start right here at 8:30. The women's game is at 7 o'clock at Colonial Life Arena against Western Carolina, looking to bounce back off that Notre Dame loss. Our coverage of that one will start 6:45, and then we'll switch over to the men at 8:30, and you can follow the women's game in its entirety on 1320 AM, our sister station over there. But it's that time of year. After Thanksgiving, I feel like I know you're one of the rare people I know around here especially that gets invested in college basketball immediately.
Watched Auburn and Dayton last night, and Auburn looks – man, the SEC. I've been down on the SEC the last few years in terms of being a basketball conference. I think this is as good as I've seen this conference in a long time. I don't know if there's a national – here's the difference. I think you've had Kentucky – as a national title contender, maybe Florida is. Florida, I don't know how many people stayed up. I watched some of it on Sunday night. It was such a late start. Florida versus Duke. Florida's the best team in the SEC. And I'm not so sure that there are two or three teams better. Texas A&M, I think you mentioned yesterday, three teams in the top nine. Mm-hmm. I don't know where I put Kentucky right now in that list. But the SEC is a basketball conference is strong this year. I mean, it is a good conference. And you look at some of the wins. Last night, Auburn goes on the road and beats Dayton. You've had Florida winning some games. You've had Texas A&M knocking off Oklahoma State, and they beat Southern Cal last week, and they beat West Virginia. the conference, there's been other teams. Missouri's picked up a few wins, even though they've lost Michael Porter Jr. I think the league is as good as we've seen it in 10, 15, 20 years. It is a strong league. Arkansas blew out Connecticut over the weekend. They played North Carolina a few days ago, or back in that PK-80 Invitational. I think basketball, but tonight, from a South Carolina perspective, two things. One, very interested to see where this team is at, especially coming off that Florida International game where a bunch of the bench players didn't play. Want to see that. Two, need to have this win. This is a resume-boosting win. Look, going to Florida International, going to Wofford, the fact that you went on the road is not going to hurt the RPI when Selection Sunday comes. It may help it a little bit. But you need this win tonight because I think you've got to pick this one up. You've got to have a good non-conference schedule. It's hard right now with what I'm seeing from the South Carolina basketball team and what I'm seeing from the SEC to envision this team getting to 9 wins, getting to a 500 record in conference. I thought that this team would get a 500 record. I like the SEC right now as a basketball conference. The competition, Alabama, I hadn't even mentioned them, but this conference as a whole is a lot better. And the way I see South Carolina through 6 games so far, the way I see this conference, a 500 record is going to be a chore for this team. So they need this game tonight to kind of booster that resume in the event that they want to play in the NCAA tournament again come March.
Going to play a Temple team that already has wins over Old Dominion, Auburn, and Clemson on the early season. They did lose to LaSalle the other night, their first loss of the year. Clemson last night helping the ACC dominate the ACC Big Ten Challenge. They win at Ohio State, a good win for Brad Brownell and company. So it would be kind of certainly a marquee-ish win for the Gamecocks. I think I've seen the power numbers or the power rankings, and none of the Gamecocks' wins are against teams that are inside like the top 240 teams something in the country. So this is a kind of a barometer-type game for sure.
Yeah, I'm going to mess up his name. Echinonia kid is the one that I really liked. I watched them. I did watch Temple play LaSalle, did a little bit of scouting on Sunday afternoon. Quentin Rose is a very good guard, but the Echinonia kid, kind of a taller kid. I think we'll see Chris Silva on him tonight, maybe Mike Kotsar. He's a kid who can shoot it from outside. He comes into the game tonight averaging 15 points, shooting 44% from the field, but 47% from three-point range. That's one of the kids you got to watch. Quentin Rose is a guard for them that is a very good player. Actually kind of made some mistakes down the stretch against LaSalle that cost them that game. They're not a deep team. This is not a very deep team. They've got guys. They got 4 guys that play 32 minutes or more. So you know where you're going to get the majority of your points and the majority of your minutes from them tonight. Again, those same 4 players are averaging 18, 17, 15, and 9 points per game. So, again, it'll be on South Carolina tonight. But a lot of starters, I imagine, unless Martin trusts his bench more after a few days of practice.
It's going to be really interesting to see, too. I think we get a pretty good gauge. Now, Florida International just doesn't have the talent South Carolina does, and the Gamecocks able to exploit them, especially down low. Career games for Chris Silva and Mike Kotsar. How do those guys adjust now when the level of competition goes up a notch? And can they raise their level and be equally as productive, or at least somewhere close to as productive? If they can, I think this team can be pretty good. If not, if there's foul trouble issues with Silva again and Kotsar can be rendered kind of ineffective like he was last year at times, then it's going to be a real struggle, especially as we've seen the guard play pretty inconsistent outside of Hassani Gravitt, who's been relatively solid.
And the competition Gravitt's going to go up against tonight increases dramatically. Right. It increases dramatically. And again, I will be interested to see what happens with Rakim Felder as we move forward. This starts a stretch here for South Carolina basketball. We're going to learn a lot. We'll learn a lot tonight, but a Thursday night game, a Saturday game, Saturday against UMass, next Wednesday against Wyoming, and then the following Saturday against Coastal Carolina. So 4 games over the next 9 days for the Gamecocks. They will learn a lot about this team, have a chance to really invest in them before bowl practice gets going again for football season.
He's Bill Gunner. I'm Tim Hill. We got a Frank's Discount Tire poll question up and rolling right now, asking you which top 4 ranked team right now do you have the most confidence is going to make that college football playoff, as they're all playing conference championship games this weekend. Clemson, Oklahoma, Wisconsin, and Auburn are your choices. Let me update those voting results right now at Tim Hill 107.5 on Twitter, where you can officially vote. 239 votes in right now with 39 minutes left before this thing closes out. almost half of you, 49% of you, going with Clemson as the team you're most confident will make the college football playoff. Oklahoma in second place at 36% of the vote. Auburn in third with just 10% of the vote, and Wisconsin in last. I'm a bit surprised that that Clemson number is so high. I think it's more representation of the opponents that these teams are playing, possibly with Miami going into this thing, literally kind of limping in off their first loss of the season. A couple of key guys hurt.
But again, I think Oklahoma, to me, the team playing the best football in the country is Auburn. They're just hot right now.
Mm-hmm.
But they
do have their best player limping into this thing, too.
Yeah, that's a good point. If I were to rank the teams in terms of who's playing the best, I would go Auburn, Oklahoma, Clemson. I think Oklahoma. I think we are ignoring Oklahoma because they did the Oklahoma thing that was so prevalent under Bob Stoops, which is blow a game during a season that you don't expect. They were a 31-point favorite against Iowa State. They were at home. They lost the game. People don't talk about that they lost their running back. They lost three defensive backs. And there were some significant injuries in that game. And we always talk about, well, Kelly Bryant was out against Syracuse. There was some significant injuries for Oklahoma in that Iowa State game that cost them the game, especially in the secondary where Iowa State was able to take advantage of them. I think Clemson's playing good. I just also think that you make a little bit too much out of a dominant victory over South Carolina. I think South Carolina's a good football team. I don't think they're a great football team. I don't take too much away from that. I think Auburn is hot right now. I think Oklahoma and Clemson are the better football teams than Auburn, but Auburn's playing as good as anybody right now. Whatever Gus Malzahn does, he just has a way of his team kind of ramping up through the end of the season and playing its best football in November, typically when they get hot.
Looking forward to hearing from you. We'll get into our reaction from our Perry Orth interview segment as well. The former Gamecock quarterback joined us about a half hour or so ago and had some interesting comments about the Gamecock offense and how things might move forward or what he's seen so far from this season, his first season removed from playing quarterback for the Gamecocks. We're out to the Love Chevrolet phone lines. We didn't even mention in the first segment of this hour, Bill, but the Tennessee coaching search, obviously huge news nationally. Moving on from Jeff Brohm yesterday to now to NC State coach Dave Doran, and just where Tennessee fan base is right now, all kind of strung out over this. Brad would like to weigh in this morning and give his hot take. Good morning, Brad.
Hey, good morning, guys. How are you this morning?
All right.
Well, I was just calling to give you a real quick and simple joke. Anybody can tell and anybody can deliver the punchline. Ready for it?
Let's hear it.
All right, Tennessee. Done over with. I tell you what, them Vols just got no idea what they're doing as far as the coaching staff and replacement. They got greedy quite a few years ago, decided 8-10 wins aren't good enough, and they're paying for it now. So at this point, they're basically on the road to, if anybody can coach and anybody's willing to come, welcome to Tennessee.
Thank you, Brad. Crank that up, Jim.
Have a good night.
We haven't heard from Tennessee Mike in a while.
I hadn't heard from any Tennessee fans in a while. I think Brent got one the other day, right?
Well, Amy Lawrence got one this morning right before our show, and it sounded like a therapy session to the 100th degree.
Yeah.
It was impressive. The question we've asked is, would you rather be Arizona State with Herm Edwards coming to run your program at 63 years old and out of the coaching game for 9 years and out of the college coaching game for 3 decades, I think you mentioned? Or would you rather be Tennessee still in the middle of this process? Tommy, what do you think about Herm Edwards heading to Arizona State?
Oh, I mean, he's a personal friend of mine, so, I mean, I kind of like it. But, you know, he's been out of the game for a while, so, I mean, that's bad. But, I mean, who would want to step into Tennessee? Because it's just a dumpster fire right now. I mean, you've seen all the embarrassing coaching, turning down all these offers. I mean, listen, it's in really bad shape right now for them. And I think what they need to do is go after Peyton Manning. If they want to settle, if they want to get their fans back on board, that would be the guy I go after. And I think he's the only guy that can get them satisfied for right now. But, you know, back to Herm Edwards, I think part of the reason he took that job is ESPN is still laying off people. So I'm just wondering if he was one of those guys that was going to get let go. And then he's seen this offer come up, so why not take it? Why not take a chance? Everybody knows he's a great coach. He loves the game. And I think more than that, since he's got involved in the Under Armour game, I think you can tell that he loves being around football more, and everybody knows he's so knowledgeable about the game. But I think he loves the kids, and maybe that's part of the reason he got involved in the Under Armour game. Maybe that's now the reason he's the new coach of Arizona State.
Interesting perspective. We appreciate the phone call, Tommy. I didn't think about what he was saying about the ESPN layoffs.
Good point.
But Herm Edwards is 63 years old.
Arizona State's still got to make the hire. It's not like Herm Edwards said, oh, I'm going to, you know. I get that. Like, Arizona State's, I'm sure a lot of people would have liked that job. What I think is crazy about Arizona State is you could, assuming, maybe Kevin Sumlin just told him, I'm going to take a year off. But if Kevin Sumlin's out there, that's the guy.
Well, here's the part about that is, I think it was Ray Anderson, is Ray McDonald, I forget which one. I think it's Ray Anderson is their athletic director. He came out and said that guys on the former staff are going to stay on the staff. So Kevin Sumlin is not that guy who you're going to dictate
push
terms
around
to,
yeah.
I think, and has to come in and take orders. Like, Kevin Sumlin's going to make, what, $10 million to get fired here in the next 60 days? He's good.
Yeah.
Herm Edwards may be in a different position, and I think he probably goes back a ways with the AD and has a working friendship. This is a guy who used to be an agent for coaches, so I'm sure they have a previous relationship there. The only thing where I disagree with Tommy is that Herm Edwards is a great coach. I don't think that's been proven. You mentioned his career record.
57-77.
Right. That is not great. He's a great football ambassador. Mm-hmm. That's how I see him. Tremendous on television. I like his work there. We all know the rant. You play to win the game. But as far as results go and being a proven great coach, I don't see that there, especially on the college level where it's a different animal. I mean, John Gruden's the best example of that, saying I'd get a school put on probation
exactly
in a heartbeat because I'm not used to those rules and I don't operate that way and I want to do football 24/7 and the NCAA doesn't allow that. That's the really interesting part that's going to be part of this Herm Edwards experience. Also, that he's 63 years old.
Well, that does it. If he gives him 7 years,
right,
coaching into your 70s now is it's becoming the – Bob Stoops is the outlier in the equation, the guy who says, I'm done, I'm out, I'm in my 50s. More and more guys you're seeing, I think, coach into their right around 70, 71. Hire the right staff and you send them out there.
When does it end well, though? Bill Snyder's working out pretty well for Kansas State. Outside of that, how has it ended well when you're near the 70? We saw it in horribly here. With Steve Spurrier.
I'm thinking.
Okay. Good luck with that. I'll give you a few more minutes while we go back out the Love Chevrolet phone lines. We mentioned Kurt Roper and Perry Orth, and that was like the bat signal for Ted. Ted is up next with us. Good morning, sir.
Yes, sir. Y'all woke me up when y'all started talking
mm-hmm.
that.
That'll do it.
I did. I'm only going to talk for a second because I have had a bad cold this week. That's why I didn't call earlier. But I did hear somebody tell me that there was a tweet to Roper the other day from the athletic director at Rice, and they said they were very interested in him, except the one thing he had to do was hire an offensive coordinator. Well, y'all don't think that's funny? I thought it was pretty funny. And are y'all still there? Did you hang up on
me? No, we're here. We got you.
I thought that was pretty cute. But the one thing I wanted to say was, you know, back when I talked about the Carolina-Clemson game a week or so ago, I stated one thing that we need to do was not be conservative. We have nothing to lose by playing Clemson. If we thought we could win the game with one touchdown or two touchdowns, we were absolutely crazy as you know what. When your defense plays 8 yards off the receivers, I don't think you're going to ever stop anybody. We saw what Wofford did when they tried to play 8 yards off the receivers. But I want to make one more comment, and then I'll hang up. And we didn't go for the 4th-and-1. If you remember, I told y'all about the 4th-and-3 against Georgia. On 3rd down, we threw the long pass like we normally do, which is stupid as heck on the sidelines. And then we tried the field goal with 4th-and-3. Like, that field goal was going to really mean something if we made it. We should have gone for it. Same thing with Clemson. 4th-and-1. What do you have to lose, Muschamp? Grow some you-know-what. That's all I got to say. Thank you.
You're welcome, Ted. You're welcome.
A report is out there. Tony Morrell, TheBigSpur.com, has confirmed it. Kurt Roper interviewed with Rice last night. So not sure what that means. Not sure how much.
Isn't it usually a standard operating procedure for a head coach to then hire an offensive coordinator, by the way?
It, I'm trying to think. Was there an actual offensive coordinator in title?
I think we had co-offensive coordinator.
I mean, you had run game coordinator, pass game coordinator, coordinator to get the quarterback to the...
And it was great that Spurrier could hardly say it without giggling. Like, yep, that's what we needed to do to get these guys paid.
Yeah, he knew. But no, the report out there, several reports out there, and then I see this morning Tony Morrell of thebigspur.com again has confirmed it. Kurt Roper has at least interviewed with Rice for their head coaching vacancy. Did so last night.
Interesting development in the coaching carousel that goes around and around, and Tennessee seems to be kind of stuck in the middle of it and watching it and been crying themselves to sleep at night, maybe with some Tennessee libations. Shepherd's Glass inbox feedback coming in this morning. Robert Nelson says, Tennessee can be patient. Santa might bring a better option than who they will likely hire. Regardless, good old Cocky Top, he says. Cocky Top, USC. Michael A. Lewis, UT is so awful, but they weren't willing to pay more for an up-and-comer and is flirting with one of the ACC's supposed best coaches. I haven't heard that about Dave Doran. Have you? I mean, especially with who they have now, proven coaches. We talked about it many times. That was the off-season conversation. The ACC improved because of their proven coaches they have in there.
You'd have minimum five coaches ahead of him, right?
So
Sweeney, yeah. Fisher, Rick. Fuente. I'd have Fuente ahead of him,
mm-hmm.
And I'd at least have Paul Johnson ahead of him, right?
Eh.
What do you mean?
I can see an NC State fan arguing that for sure.
Mm.
I mean, what has Paul Johnson done for you lately?
Well, don't give me that. I'd have Paul Johnson ahead of him. Can you make the case? Even though he's at Duke and it's so hard that Cutcliffe would be ahead
sure.
of him. That's
absolutely.
Six. Bronco Mendenhall.
Fedora before this year.
Fedora.
For sure. Bronco Mendenhall as well.
Okay, so no, it's
we just
not,
named more than half the coaches in the league.
I wouldn't have. I mean, Dave Dorn saved his job this year. He was if he goes 6-6, 7-5, he may not be the coach there. He saved his job. So
Seth, a Pack alum, has hit me up on the Shepherd's Glass inbox, pointing out that he doesn't think Will Muschamp outcoached Dave Dorn in that first game because of the statistics were squarely on NC State's side and. I think Seth and I are seeing things the same way. We just give credit differently. I guess he's giving credit for the coaching staff to do all of that stuff. To me, I give the credit to the coach who wins the game. So finding a way to win the game, despite what I thought was a bit of a talent gap for NC State in their favor, that's why I gave Will Muschamp the credit for having the better coaching performance.
Do you feel like first games and bowl games, when you have significant layoff, that's more on the coaches?
Exactly.
Than it is to be prepped for that to have.
That was a big criticism of Steve Spurrier, right? Before he came to Carolina, is that it was a really mediocre bowl record. And before winning all those bowl games to kind of put a exclamation point on the 11-2 seasons, that was a big criticism.
And even his opening games were generally pretty ugly. The best opponent he played beat him by 40 or 30. What? I forget what the final is. I think most people have blocked it out, but whatever the Texas A&M score was that night.
Mm-hmm.
But you go back and you think about all the openers for Steve Spurrier. Now, that doesn't make him a bad coach, mind you, obviously, but that preparation time and then in the bowl game to get your team motivated to play in that game. One of the best coaching jobs I thought Spurrier did was that 6-6 team that went and beat Miami in the Independence Bowl. To not have a Spurrier, I think, took that one a little bit more seriously so that he would not have the losing record on his resume. And that team was a little bit more prepped and ready than maybe they had been for, say, I don't know, the Outback Bowl against Iowa years prior.
Or the Florida State game, you could say, in the old Chick-fil-A Bowl.
Right.
PD Gamecock hits us up and says, the Orth segment was great. And we have that on our podcast page, by the way, 1075thegame.com, the former Gamecock quarterback joining us in the last hour, talking a lot of specifics about what he saw in the Clemson game and what he has experienced Steve Spurrier versus Kurt Roper in the Carolina offense. PD Gamecock continues, says, I will say that there's a chasm of difference between the head coach wanting conservative plays to protect the ball and the lead versus the offensive coordinator calling plays that can't pick up first downs and keep the defense off the field when you have a lead. And that was the frustrating part for the Texas A&M blowing the 17-7 lead in the third quarter, right? Mm-hmm. That was certainly the story afterwards. The Gamecocks got the lead, went too conservative. Texas A&M got the momentum, scored 17 in a row, ended up winning a game that Carolina kind of had. But outside of that, to me, that's not the story of the 2017 offense, right? The 2017 offense story is, and I wanted to mention this when Perry Orth was talking about it beforehand. He mentioned the media hype going into this year about the Gamecock offense. To me, it was... started and consistently fanned the flames by comments from Will Muschamp and Kurt Roper in the offseason. I understand Roper didn't make a lot of comments, but there was never that pullback of, okay, keep this in mind. We're still in the beginning processes, or we're still at the very kind of beginning stages of our offense and its evolution. There was none of that. It was Jake Bentley is a different dude. I mean, it continued right before the Clemson game. Night and day difference is the exact quote that Will Muschamp gave about Jake Bentley going into the Clemson game this year compared to last year. We didn't see night and day different results. I mean, that's only a logical next step for anyone to hear those comments and say, well, if you're going to tell me the quarterback's night and day different, then you're expecting much more positive results. That's the story of the 2017 Gamecock offense to me, is that we didn't see those.
No, number one, I don't know. I'm trying to think back to specific mentions by Will Muschamp that kind of promoted the offense. And I don't really remember any. I know he thought it would be better. I think we all thought it would be better. And it just didn't live up. It just, quite frankly, given what you thought they had. And I realize Deebo Samuel being out. I realize there were injuries. But Deebo Samuel being out, Zach Bailey missing some time, Rico Dowdle never being healthy, certainly didn't help the offense. But I think most people would agree that it just seemed like at times the execution wasn't there, that the play calling seemed a little erratic or not as creative in certain situations as you would like. I think it was more myself. I think I expected more out of the offense. Not that I am the only person, but I think it was more media hype. I mean, again, I'm at SEC Media Day, and Gary Danielson says, well, Jake Bentley's the best quarterback in the conference. Guy who's been around the conference a whole lot, who's seen a bunch of quarterbacks. I mean, you hear other people say that, you kind of expect that. I mean, on the flip side of that, I still see people putting up the memes of, I know it was Greg McElroy, I can't remember if it was Marcus Spears or Booger McFarland that picked South Carolina and had going 4-8. And obviously South Carolina went 8-4. But, I think that nobody knew really what to expect of this South Carolina team in terms of record, but that they felt the offense would take a big step forward, especially again after that South Florida bowl game. That's the part. I know you'll put it up on the if you're just tuning in, Tim will put it up on the podcast page later on, but what Perry Orth said about, well, in the South Florida game, the reason the offense looked better is there was nothing to lose. They just went out and threw the ball all over the field. And they played like with almost reckless abandon. And so that's why the offense looked good. Now they were going into the season going, oh, man, we're not behind. We can't do that. Let's not play like that. And that's an awful mentality to have. And
but what I saw was they got in a rhythm in that offense. Do you remember another game in 2017 that they got in a rhythm?
Maybe Missouri? Wofford, really? Or I wouldn't say Missouri. I mean, remember Missouri, they're struggling. They're going, they're not.
No, I'm saying second quarter on, they got in a pretty solid rhythm there because they looked pretty bad in the first quarter. And after that, they were able to run the football and maintain a decent rhythm.
I thought Wofford, because of the way they were able to throw the ball, but it was a different style. Again, I think that was the one thing you looked at. You didn't know what kind of game plan they were going to come out from game. Wofford, short passes. Mm-hmm. They just all right, short passes. And we've kind of talked about it. Perry, I go back to the Kentucky game, and Perry brought up in that game the way Kentucky was playing defense dictated what Kurt Roper did instead of your offense going out and dictating what the defense did. They just said, well, we can't throw it deep, so we're not going to throw it deep. We're not going to try. We're just going to take everything short. And it didn't work, obviously.
It was a bunch of completed passes in a row, right? 16
most,
in a row.
Most passes, I think 16 passes in a row. I think, I'll pull it up statistically speaking, I think it was the most passes Bentley completed. I think it was the most passes he threw and completed all year. It was the most yards he threw for. I think that was his only 300-yard game
right,
of the season.
That was the frustrating part for him in the post-game press conference, being questioned about the offense. And he says, well, pretty good stats here. The problem was 13 points. Mm-hmm. And that was a big issue this year too as well. Red zone touchdown efficiency. So all these things to me come under the offensive coordinator's umbrella. I understand why you asked Orth what you did. And again, you can hear that on our podcast page right now if you want to. He mentioned Will Muschamp being pretty conservative. Like that's the way he approaches games. And that's obvious because he comes at it from the defensive side. But he has also said that Kurt Roper's in charge of the offense. I pretty much let him do what he wants to do. Now, we have no idea how it actually works during the game, and we never will. We have to take them for their word on that.
You know, and look, I'm just glancing over very quickly Jake Bentley's numbers. That Kentucky game was, statistically speaking, his highest marks of anything all season. Yards, 304, pass attempts, 36, completions, 24. He never had anything more than that in any other game. What's kind of fascinating to me that I think if you're a South Carolina fan is bothersome six games this year, half of the season, Jake Bentley did not throw for 200 yards. You have a quarterback like that. Look, Bentley struggled. For whatever reason, Jake Bentley struggled this year. How do you have a quarterback? Kind of mind-blowing, honestly, now that I look at that stat, that they won eight games. I don't know. I'm not trying to give them credit for that. It's just kind of, I did not notice that until I just looked it up. Six games this year, Missouri, Arkansas, Tennessee, Vanderbilt, Wofford, and Clemson. Jake Bentley doesn't throw for 200 yards. That you have a quarterback like that who's got talent. I know he struggled this year. That's kind of an unacceptable number, in my opinion.
Let's go out to Love Chevrolet phone lines, hear what you have to say about this. Chris would like to weigh in on the Gamecock offense. Good morning, Chris.
Hey, good morning, guys. One thing I'd be interested in knowing, and I don't know if there's a way for us to find out, is what our average yardage was on first downs, because it seems to me a lot of times we were taking chances downfield with first down and, of course, being incomplete, and then we're left with second long, third long. And whereas Clemson, I was noticing the other night, would always seem to pick up something on first down, whether it be 3, 4, 5 yards, and that leaves them more manageable. So I think our first down offense lacks a lot to be desired. If I had felt that way all year long, it seemed like we just are always behind the chains. And
I hear you,
Chris. There's a way to see that average, but it'd be interesting.
A lot of one-yard runs when you're talking about throwing the ball down the field, and that doesn't work. Your second and 10, one-yard run, your second and 9, a lot of that. To me, I hear first down offense and evaluate that very much the same way I evaluate third down defense. I don't think that's a product of first down or third down necessarily. I think it's just a result of what kind of quality offense or quality defense you have. Clemson's offense is good. So would they get better, more yards on first down?
That's a good point.
Carolina's offense wasn't very good. They didn't get very many yards on first down. Let's hear what Diane has to say looking to the future. Fortunately, we have a resident recruiting nerd on the program in Bill Gunter. Good morning, Diane.
Hey, good morning. I don't know a lot about the X's and O's, but I love Carolina football. I love college football. I have three things. It seems like in the Clemson game and the Kentucky game, they knew exactly what play was unfolding, and they were there before Jake could get the ball there, number one. Therefore, he probably didn't get a lot of yards after the catch or the run. The second thing that bothers me, when you've got 5 stars, and no matter how big my heart is as a 3-star, I am not going to go through those lines that were playing against us in the Clemson game. 13 of their players made first, second, and third team ACC. And that, to me, was a big thing. And I love my Gamecocks, don't get me wrong, but when you got a 5-star and I'm a 3-star, I can only do so much. And the offense we did lose due to injuries, I think, would have helped us. Last year, we went and got 6 wins. This year, we went and got 8 wins. They did it on heart, but I still want more, like, people not to know what the play is going to unfold into before we execute it. You understand what I'm asking?
Mm-hmm.
Because I think a lot of times it seems like to me they had already read what we would go do because we weren't creative enough.
Thanks for the phone call, Diane. Yeah, Bill's harped on that often this year, lack of creativity on offense. I think that's been a general complaint, especially in year number 2, where we heard in year number 1, not enough experience in the system, kind of handcuffed into doing things relatively simplistic to make sure there are no issues, communication-wise or otherwise, penalty-wise. And you expected to see more this year because of what we heard and because of older, more experienced players and talented players. And we didn't see that by and large, I don't think, this year. And I think we might overcomplicate that a little bit. For instance, Georgia's offense wasn't very creative necessarily. They were just good because they had really good players. And that goes back to what Diane was saying about 5 stars versus 3 stars. It goes back to Steve Spurrier having Jadeveon Clowney, Stephon Gilmore and company. And that's when they had their better teams.
Well, but that's, I think, the point. You need to know your talent level and how creative or aggressive you have to be with what you have. You're exactly right. When you have a Sony Michel and a Nick Chubb and a solid offensive line, there's not a whole lot of reason to be real creative. We're going to run it left. We're going to run it right. We're going to throw it short. It's pretty easy there. So with that in mind, you can get away with that. I do totally agree with what Diane said there. That's where Kurt Roper really needed to step up, I think, a little bit more this year. Your talent base at times was not good enough to line up and run the plays that you needed to do. They were too simplistic. You have to get a little bit more creative, have to have a little bit more motion, misdirection to confuse the defense. And that's how you could have gotten away with it. Instead, it seemed like at times South Carolina said, you know what? We have enough talent on offense. Our offensive line's fine. We're just going to line up and do this. And quite frankly, the majority of the games South Carolina played in, they just weren't the better team. And some of they did still get to 8 wins. Let's not act like this is a 5-7 team that's got to make drastic changes.
Yeah, it's nice to have this conversation coming off a bunch of success. And again, this goes back to expectations, kind of talking about where Tennessee is with their coaching search. It's where South Carolina is right now as well with 8 wins. I think Ray Tanner would probably be the first guy to tell you. He always said he loves being at a place where the expectations are very high. And I think that's a good sign for Gamecock football moving forward, is that mediocrity will not be accepted and looking to take the next step. Best contribution via the Shepherd's Glass inbox today came from Joe, commenting on the Tennessee coaching situation. It says it has officially become the cinematic version of the Cleveland Indians in the movie Major League.
Entire world.
Oh, look. This is Charlie Donovan with the Cleveland Indians.
How would you like to manage the Indians this year?
I don't know.
What do you mean you don't know? This is a chance to manage in the big leagues.
Let me think it over, will you, Charlie? I got a guy on the other line about some white walls. I'll talk to you later.
Apparently, Greg Schiano did not have that reaction, but most people since have had similar.
Greg Schiano was thrilled. Yeah. The one guy, you told him to get lost. Dave Dorn, I think, is thrilled. I'll see. It'll be interesting to see if they get something resolved today or if they're going to go further down this path. One of the situations that kind of played out yesterday, because NC State, North Carolina State's working on an extension for Dorn.
Well, now they are.
Just like basically Oregon's tried to be preemptive and get out there and go, okay, Willie, we got you, Willie Taggart, we got you an extension here. We don't want you going to Florida State. Want to go ahead and get this extension signed? So
Robert's got a great one. I think Tennessee should go after Jim McElwain. Tennessee's a dumpster fire. Jim is a dumpster fire. Two negatives make a positive. Make it happen.
Oh, like when it got personal.
You imagine that at Tennessee.
I like this. This is from Gator Dave, Dave Waters, who does a lot of work for the Florida website. What's worse than a dumpster fire? A turnover trash can fire.
It's a very good point.
Hey, think about that. Was that like a precursor? Like when that thing got trotted out, you're like, oh, this is. I mean, that really is just kind of the symbol of Tennessee right now. You just. It's not the power T anymore. It's a trash can, your Rubbermaid trash can that you put up by your curbside with just a T on it, right?
You got it. Frank's Discount Tire poll question results coming up in just a second. First, we're back out to the Love Chevrolet phone lines. Brian is weighing in this morning, I think, to help everyone have a better Thursday.
Well, I've tried to. First off, that Diane, she starts her phone call with she doesn't know her X's and O's and then pretty much breaks it down like an analyst.
Mm-hmm. She was, definitely knows more than we
fun.
Do.
More than I do, for sure. So, like, I had something happen right before the first game of the season this year, so it was a weird football season for me.
Mm-hmm.
But I just kind of wanted to point out that, you know, at the beginning of the year, if you told anybody, hey, we're going to have 8 wins, their reaction would be, that's awesome, no coaches get fired, everyone's great, let's go party.
That's a very good point.
My second thing here, I'm glad, you know, it's been busy. I haven't been able to listen to the show a lot. I'm glad you still have people who call up and say, I don't know if you remember, but I called you and I told you. Those are always fun phone calls. And number three, you guys have a podcast?
Crazy, huh? Brian, ladies and gentlemen, a new father recently, and maybe that's the thing he was alluding to that happened
changed
to him.
Changed his football season a little bit.
Perspective. He's a positive guy now. Sometimes it takes that to happen.
That's a good point.
But 8-4, having these conversations today, much different than it could be, certainly the other way around and or anywhere in between. Before the season started, Bill, you and I agreed. I asked you what number of wins in the regular season would be undeniable progress for Will Muschamp in Gamecock football. We both came up with 8. What happened at Florida, what happened in Tennessee does not change that in my mind. I think it changes it in some other people's minds. We have to remember, though, when you're talking about evaluating football programs now, kind of 16 through 40 around the country, they all have their issues that you can pick out. I mean, we've had the college football playoff discussion, and they're all issues in there. Some negatives that you can pull out and make a case against the other team. The Clemson loss to Syracuse, for instance, or Oklahoma losing to Iowa State. By the way, those are the top two vote getters in today's Frank's Discount Tire poll question. Which top four team right now are you most confident in that will make the college football playoff? 270 votes. Clemson gets nearly half, 49%. I think Miami losing to Pitt in their last game and having several key starters out in that ACC championship game Saturday night has a lot to do with that. Oklahoma finished the second with 37% of the vote. Auburn gets 10% of the vote. Wisconsin just 4%. That was fun today, huh?
I had a good time.
Nice work.
I do my best.
You finish your sentences excellently.
Thank you.